ജയ വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാഷ്ട്രയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദയ്ക്ക് ജയം നിത്യലീല പ്രവിഷ്ട ഓം വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹാരാഷ്ട്രയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദയ്ക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യശീല ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ഡഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനയ്ക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാമയ്ക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമയ്ക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ്പുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സാമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗൗർ പ്രേമാനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരുവൻ ശ്രീ ഗുരുവാംഗ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ശ്രീല പ്രഭുപാദ നമാമശ്വപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേശ്വരി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമി നാമിനി നമസ്തേ സരസ്വദേവം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണി നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണി ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം അജ്ഞാനതിമിരാന്തസ്യ ജ്ഞാനാഞ്ജനശലാകയ ചക്ഷുർമീലിതാം യേന തസ്മൈ ശ്രീഗുരവേ നമഃ ശ്രീചൈതന്യമനോഭീഷ്ടാം സ്ഥാപിതാം യേന ഭൂതലേ സ്വയം രൂപകദാ മഹ്യം ദദാതി സ്വപദാന്തികം വന്ദേഹം ശ്രീഗുരു ശ്രീയുതാപദകമലം ശ്രീഗുരും വൈഷ്ണവാംശ്ച ശ്രീരൂപം സഗ്രജാതം സഹഗണ രഘുനാഥാൻവിതം തം സജീവം സാദ്വൈതം സാവധൂതം പരിജനാസഹിതം കൃഷ്ണചൈതന്യദേവം ശ്രീരാധാകൃഷ്ണപദാൻ സഹഗണലളിതാൻ ശ്രീവിശാഖാൻവിതാംശ്ച നമാവോം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമദേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്തസ്വാമിനിതിനാമിനി നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതിദേവേ ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണി നിർവിശേഷശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണി നമാവോം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തിസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതിനാമിനി ശ്രീവർഷഭാനവീദേവി ദൈതായ കൃപാബ്ധയെ കൃഷ്ണസംബന്ധ വിജ്ഞാനം ദായിദേ പ്രഭവേ നമഃ മാധുര്യോജ്ജ്വല പ്രേമാജ്ഞ ശ്രീരൂപാനുഗഭക്തിദ ശ്രീഗൗരകരുണാശക്തി വിഗ്രഹായ നമോസ്തുതേ നമസ്തേ ഗൗരവാണി ശ്രീമൂർത്തയേ ദീനധാരിണി രൂപാനുഗ വിരുദ്ധാവാ സിദ്ധാന്തധ്വന്ദഹാരിണി നമോ ഗൗരകിഷോരായ സാക്ഷാത് വൈരാഗ്യമൂർത്തയെ വിപ്രലംബരസാംബോധേ പദാംബുജായതേ നമഃ നമോ ഭക്തിവിനോദായ സച്ചിദാനന്ദനാമിനി ഗൗരശക്തിസ്വരൂപായ രൂപാനുഗവരായതേ ഗൗരാവിർഭവഭൂമേ സ്വം നിർദ്ദോഷ്ടാ സ ജനപ്രിയ വൈഷ്ണവസാർവഭൗമ ശ്രീ ജഗന്നാഥായ ദേ നമഃ വംശകൽപതരുഭ്യശ്ച കൃപാസിന്ധുഭ്യേവ ച പതിതാനാം പാവനേഭ്യോ വൈഷ്ണവേഭ്യോ നമോ നമഃ നമോ മഹാവദാന്യായ കൃഷ്ണ പ്രേമപ്രദായതേ കൃഷ്ണായ കൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ നാമ്നേ ഗൗരത്വിഷേ നമഃ പഞ്ചതത്വാത്മകം കൃഷ്ണം ഭക്തരൂപസ്വരൂപകം ഭക്താവതാരം ഭക്താഖ്യം നമാമി ഭക്തശാത്വികം ഹേ കൃഷ്ണകരുണാ സിന്ധോ ദീനബന്ധോ ജഗൽപദേ ഗോപേശ ഗോപികാ കാന്ത രാധാകാന്ത നമോസ്തുതേ ജയതാം സുരതോ മംഗോർ മമ മന്ദമതേർഗതി മത്സർവസ്വപദാം ഭോജോ രാധാമദനമോഹനോ ദിവ്യവൃന്ദാരണ്യകൽപദ്രുമാദ ശ്രീമദ്രത്നാകരസിംഹാസനസ്ഥോ ശ്രീമദ്രാധാശീല ഗോവിന്ദദേവോ പ്രേഷ്ടാലഭിഃ സേവ്യമാനോ സ്മരാമി ശ്രീമൻ രാസരസാരംഭി വംശീ വടതടസ്ഥിതാഃ കർഷാൻ വേണുസ്വനേർഗോപിർ ഗോപിനാഥാ ശ്രീയേസ്തുനാ തപ്തകാഞ്ചന ഗൗരാംഗീ രാധേ വൃന്ദാവനേശ്വരി വൃഷഭാനുസുതേ ദേവി പ്രണമാമി ഹരിപ്രിയേ. ജയ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീയദ്വൈതഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദ. ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ, ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ, ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ, ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ, ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ, ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ. So we were discussing this first verse in the Shobhanishad, isn't it? The invocation is Om Purnamadam Purnam Idam Purnad Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Avashishyate. That's the first in the invocation. Upanishad says after that Ishavasamidam Sarvam യത്കിഞ്ച ജഗത്യാം ജഗത് തേന തെക്ത്വേന പുഞ്ചിത മാ ഗ്രഥ കസ്യ സിദ്ധനം. ദി ഫസ്റ്റ് പ്രേയേഴ്സ്, ദി ഫസ്റ്റ് മന്ത്രം ഇൻ ദി ഈശോപനിഷത്. സോ വി ഹവ് സീൻ ദർ ദാറ്റ് ദ കംപ്ലീറ്റ് എസൻസ് ഓഫ് ദ ഹോൾ ഈശോപനിഷത് ഈസ് ഇൻ ദാറ്റ് വേഴ്സ് ഈശാവാസ്യമിതം സർവം. ആൻഡ് വിത്ത് ദാറ്റ് വൺ വേഴ്സ് അലോൺ ദി സേജസ് ഒപ്പീനിയൻ ഈസ് ദാറ്റ് യു ക്യാൻ റിയലൈസ് ദ സെൽഫ്. ദാറ്റ്സ് ഹൗ പൊട്ടൻ്റ് ദാറ്റ് വേഴ്സ് ഇസ്. Provided we understand, we bring that and take it on board. That's why. this same verse appears in the Srimad Bhagavatam, as I have said before, in a little slightly different way. Here it is Ishavasam Idam Sarvam. There it is Atmaika Vishwam Sarvam. Therefore, Ishwara and Atma is non-different. There it's non-different. Srimad Bhagavatam is concerned. Bhagavatam is teaching us this important principle. The presence of Krishna in everybody as Atma. Presence of everyone as Atma. So therefore it says, Ishavasam idam sarvam ishwarena achadaniyam. That means completely cover the world with Krishna. That is the principle. Idam sarvam ishwarena achadaniyam. Achadaniyam means you can cover the whole thing with Krishna's presence in every living entity. So that's what that verse means. Ishavasam idam sarvam ishwarena achadaniyam. In other words, till we start seeing everything in this world in relationship with Krishna as Krishna's indirect or direct manifestation, therefore seeing means that itself is a not seeing with the eyes. That's what it means. We'll say like this, seeing everything as Krishna's manifestation. Practically speaking, it is not seeing with our naked eyes, but what is it then? It is what we experience from every living entity. In other words, our relationship with every living entity has to be on that state. On that state. It is Krishna I am dealing with in that consciousness to live in this world. That is why it said, Idam Sarvam Ishwarena Achadaniyam. You have to cover the whole thing with that. Lokate Alokyate Iti Lokaha. Lokam Lokam, what we call it as, Lokam means the world, is nothing but what we allocate, what we see, is that is what our world actually means. When we misunderstand certain things from the spiritual point of view, it is one way. We are used to experiencing everything through the senses. So we understand everything through senses only. When we say, oh, I see this world means I see through the eyes. Or relationship changes when you come to the spiritual platform. In the spiritual understanding, that when we say alokiti iti lokaha, that means the world has come from the mind inside. If you remember, I discussed this last time also, that what's happening to us is, in the beginning the soul exists, in the end also the soul exists. In between, the soul has to go through all these various states, when that happens, the mind pops up. It is when the mind pops up, it is at that time the world manifests in us. Otherwise the world doesn't exist for us, isn't it? The existence of the world in us happens when the mind comes up inside. So that is why in the Bhagavatam, the Chadishlogi, the first one, Ahameva Samevagre, and these words are closely connected.
Ahameva Samevagre, that verse in the Bhagavatam, which says in the beginning it was only me, in the end also it's only me. That's what Krishna is saying. And in between, all these things are coming and going, coming and going. They don't exist forever. They don't exist forever. In the Bhagavatam, when you study carefully, you will see this point brought out at different times to make us aware that reality is only one thing, that is the soul. Everything else is bogus in this world. We have to come to that understanding. But it is not easy, because for us, everything what perceived through the senses is reality, isn't it? So it won't go away, but the reality is, as far as Krishna is concerned, the only reality that exists in the whole thing, satyam or truth, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, is sat. That's the word Krishna uses, is only the soul. Everything else is, you can call it as a bluff, or it's a false, or it's it doesn't have any sense in real existence. And that is why that verse, Nasade vidyade bhavo, nabhavo vidyade sadha, ubhayoravi drishtvannam sthanayor tattu darshivi. Krishna puts that in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. That is the basis of the whole knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita. Whole Bhagavad Gita is dependent on that verse, because ultimately, after the second chapter, everything is only to support that point, to develop practically, to come to that understanding in the Bhagavad Gita. Why? Because Krishna will prove to us later that whether you are in relationship with the body, in relationship with the mind, in relationship with the intelligence, false ego, any of these things are all asat. That is the point Krishna is making there. It's all asat. They have no reality and they are not truth. From the Shastram, something is considered to be truth only if it has permanent existence, which doesn't change at all any time. Body changes, mind changes, intelligence changes, false ego changes, everything changes. But then what is the reality? The only reality is the soul behind everything, these things, what exists there. When it comes to that point, in this particular mantram, or this first one, Ishavasyam Idam Sarvam, one who has come to the platform of self-realization, what stage he is in? This is what that verse is indicating. Ishavasyam Idam Sarvam, Yat Kincha Jagatyam Jagat. And also it says here that you can give up this world, you can finish your connection with this world, with the understanding as it is a manifestation of Krishna. As Krishna's manifestation, you have to leave this world. You cannot see this world separately from Krishna. As soon as you start seeing Krishna and the world separately, then Krishna will remain in the temple. He is no more anymore a part of the world. He will remain in the temple. That is why it said like that. That Ishwarena idam sarvam achadaniyam. You have to cover everything with Ishvara, with Krishna. There were devotees who have done that in their life. That is why I'm saying that. They have come to that realization at a stage in life. So, externally, it is difficult to give up anything. So, this topic is an important topic for discussion. So, generally it's said that one who is free from Eshanatrayam. Eshanatrayam means three kinds of Eshanas exist in our life. Especially householders. What are the Eshanatrayam? Eshanatrayam means Vitheshana, Logeshana, and Dareshana. That means desire for wealth, that is Vitheshana. Desire for recognition in this world, some kind of recognition, and that is Logeshana. And the third thing, Dareshana or Putreshana, or both are considered to have family. In other words, wife and children. And all these three things in a householder's life are important. They take that very seriously. For a brahmachari, he doesn't care. He doesn't matter for him as far as life is concerned. Wherever he gets some prasadam and a place to sleep, he's satisfied. But householder's life, all this becomes very important. And majority of the people are householders in this world. So it's difficult to not to take notice of it. As far as sannyasis are concerned, again, like brahmacharis, both sannyasis and brahmacharis are children of the grihasthas. That is from the eyes of the shastram. They are to be looked after and maintained by the grihasthas. So, that is why it's said that Once you have come to that state, this realization, Ishavasamidam Sarvam, for them, no more karma is possible. No more karma is possible. All these things what we are talking about is based on the perfect situation in the Vedic system, in the Vedic tradition, not based on the modern world what you see as Brahmachari and Sannyasi. That's not practical because there's so much changes have happened since then. Nobody is able to follow that rigid law or rigid rules what Krishna has set forward in the Shastram for that. So, because as he said, that if you engage in karmam, what does that mean? Ragadvesham, kartratva, boktratvam. This will be there. This, you cannot come out of it. So, that is that what it's called. Immediately, what has come to the existence that I exist and I have something to get from outside. That is the avidya. Avidya means that ignorance comes from there. So, in order to understand this verse, we have to listen to this without any prejudice. Without any prejudice. Upanishad says that this mantram, Ishavasamidam Sarvam Yakin Jagadyan Jagad, Tena Tektene Bhungjida, Mahagada Kasusudhinam, will not go hand in hand with karma. Will not go hand in hand with karma. Karma means two things. One who has got karma, what one performs in this world. What we call today as, we can call it as the karma, is all what we are doing. With ragadvesham and expectation of results from that and with the desires attached to that. The other karma, what he refers to, what it is, the Upanishad says, is the Vedavihidam. Vedavihidam means sacrifices. Agnihotram, Vajavayam, Shodashi. There are so many sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas, meant for householders, which are not done anymore. All householders are busy with the Vikarmam now, isn't it? So, so therefore, that is what is important to be taken note of. Which Vikarmam means Ragadvesham. Vikarmam means Kartrutva Bhoktrutvam. That will always be there. Because only when you perform Vikarmam, they come in. In sacrifices, the chances are less. But Ragadvesham happening, first of all, everyone could not execute that kind of karma. See, when Varnashrama Dharma was formed and strictly given, these things were behind it. The thoughts behind that was, somehow or the other, bring the people out of these four problems. Ragadvesham, Kartratva, Bhoktratvam. In order to do that, they have created a system in such a way that ordinary people will not get pulled into it. And personalities who executed the yajna or sacrifices, they were very noble people. Very, very noble people. And they knew Shastram well, that they have executing the yajna or sacrifice with the goal of freeing themselves from the material cycle, from the cycle of birth and death. Look at Srimad Bhagavatam. If you look into 9th canto, you will see kings after kings, coming from Solar dynasty and Lunar dynasty, at a particular stage in life, leaving home and walking away from everything. Walking away from the palace, walking away from the management of the country, everything. Why? That higher goal, understanding that life is meant for self-realization, that is very strongly embedded inside. That cannot be taken out from them. All the Solar dynasty kings, and to a large extent the Lunar dynasty also were like that. That is why you find in the 9th canto a series of this son, this king, his son, this king, his son, this king, his son, this king. Keep on talking about this for this reason only. They all lived in that principle of self-realization. At some point in time, they threw away everything and walked into the forest and realized the truth through practice of yoga process. So in order to do that, while in the palace, while engaged in the administration, they had to retain that status of unattached activity. Karma Yogam had to be performed. And the greatest of all of them is Janaka. That is why Janaka's name was specifically mentioned. If you remember, Janaka Maharaj, as I said before, that when he performed that sacrifice in the palace, and great sages, Yajnavalkya Maharshi, Ashtavakra and many others used to visit him. And they used to discuss Vedantam with Janaka. Janaka was so intelligent and so realized in himself and still managing the
managing the kingdom. This is what impressed Krishna. So Krishna mentions that in the Bhagavad Gita. Astido Janagadeya, he says. Janagadeya, in other words, Janaga and others, he says. In other words, Janaga is the highest authority on the Karma Yoga. On Karma Yoga, he is the perfect personality on Karma Yoga. Who could run a whole country and get completely unattached to the results of the benefit of the activities there. So he says here that, anyway, Vidusham Kriyamana Karmam Akarmaivaha. Vidusham Kriyamana Karmam Akarmaivaha. Ajahn Swamiji says there, those who are realized souls, when they execute karmam, that karmam is akarmam. It is not a karmam anymore. Because we won't discuss that here, because they are realized souls. What they are executing is not karmam anymore. It is akarmam. When we talked about Bhagavad Gita, those verses, we talked that those things in clearly, isn't it? So, first thing is, Krishna, he is saying here, this Upanishad Mantra is saying here, to see the whole world as Ishvara Swarupam. Ishvara is there in everything. Ishvara Swarupam. So, and this principle is the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. This principle is the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is also Bhagavata Dharmam, what we call it, isn't it? It's the same principle. If you look at it, you will see that verse in the the verse in the 11th canto, Kavi Maharshi, when he asked, what's his name? Nimi, King Nimi asked that question, what is Bhagavata Dharmam? The answer, if you look at, it's the same what Ishvamanishad is saying. Kamvayu Magnim Salilam Mahimja, Jodim Shri Sattvani Dishodrumadin, Saril Samudram Shahare Shariram, Yalkinja Budam Praname Dananyaha. Kavi Maharshi says to Nimi, Kamvayu Magnim Salilam Mahimcha, that everywhere, whether it is the sky, the air, the water, the earth, wherever I look at it, Jodim Shri Sattvani Dishodrumadin, all the planets and all the stars in the sky, in all directions, Dishodrumadin, Saril Samudramscha Hare Shariram, that all these are, including the oceans and the rivers, Saril Samudramscha Hare Shariram, it is Krishna's body. It's the same thing what Upanishad is telling us. Saril Samudramscha Hare Shariram, Yal Kinja Bodham Praname Dananyaha. That seeing this everywhere, Krishna's presence like this, a devotee has only one thing to do, continuously pay the obeisances to everywhere, in all directions to everybody, seeing them as Krishna, seeing them as Krishna's forms. Krishna's forms is all these things, all this earth, water, air, ether, fire, the rivers, mountains, the seas, the wind, the earth, everything, whatever you see, only Krishna exists, nothing else exists. It is, that is why, El Kinjabudam Praname Dananyaham. That knowing this and realizing this is the perfection in a devotee's life. So, Srimad Bhagavatam is also bringing us to the same point. As the Ishopanishad is telling us. That's why he says here. Now, now when we see, as I mentioned in the last class also, when we look at the world, how do we see individuals, all individuals, 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 everywhere is individuals. And in that individuals also, it's not just individuals, is it? In the individuals we have these small units, family or society or whatever it is. In that family, somebody's father, somebody's mother, somebody's brother, sister, children like that, all kinds of relationships in there. So, and in that relationship, within the family itself, I'm repeating this again what I said last Sunday. Because as householders, we tend to forget very quickly. Remembrance is very poor in householder life because of the pressures of the householder life, working, this, that and the other. Anyway, what the principle is this, that in the householder life, we have relationships between each other. There is a relationship. We take it for granted, isn't it? This is how I am. I am the father. Somebody is the mother. Somebody is the daughter. Somebody is the son. Or whatever that is. So, and then we conclude ourselves, they have to act in that particular way. At no point in time, they should overstep their line. And they also expect us a certain relationships between all the members of the family. Members of the family. Husband, wife, children, everybody. Members of the family. So, in that relationship, certain expectations are there. From the husband, wife expects something. From the wife, husband is expecting something. Similarly, from the children, the parents, children from the parents and parents from the children also in the same way. So, sometimes it can happen that these relationships can become very difficult. Why? Because somewhere something has not worked properly up to the expectations of the parents or the expectations of the children. Generally, what we will do, we will try to somehow patch up and go, but that can sometimes cause a little uneasiness in the relationships also. Actually, all these problems within the family is called material existence. This is called samsaram. Samsaram means all these things. We take it that the family life is a perfect happy situation, isn't it? But actually it is not so. In the family life, we have accepted these positions because that is not the perfect relationship from the spiritual point of view. From the spiritual point of view, it's a different relationship. Here, because of our bodily relationships, we have accepted a position as father, mother, children like that. In that relationship, certain expectations come. When that expectations don't get fulfilled, there is a little bit of problems within the family develops in some form or the other. And therefore, this existence in that way, in this world, in family life, is called material existence, samsara. So, so this begins in the worldly plane. This begins on a worldly plane. Just because I got married and wife and child, everybody is living okay together, doesn't mean we are spiritual. We should not misunderstand in that way. Often we think like that, oh, I'm living a family man. Everything is perfect in the family life. It never works like that. There are so many millions of families. Prabhupada used to say, cats and dogs are also their families. He said, it's not a very new thing. So family life itself does not make us anyway perfect in spiritual life. What makes the spiritual life perfect is, in that family life, he says here, that there is no cure for this illness of this thing called samsaram in family life. There is no cure for that. Why there is no cure? If you chant the holy name, doesn't mean that you are cured of this problem. Everybody is not chanting or everybody is not accepting these principles, isn't it? In the same family, you will see there are two children. One child may accept Krishna consciousness and the child may completely reject it. And similarly, husband may accept it, wife may reject it. All kinds of five people cannot think in the same way. There's always differences of opinion. So, therefore, this Shruti says, Vedas are saying, this is called superimposition. Superimposition means, tena tektvena bunjida. When we have imposed samsaram, material existence in our relationships with each other, then there will be problems, whether through meditation or through chanting the holy name or by kirtanam or by deity worship, that won't go. That won't go. That problem will remain in family life. I have also seen this in some great devotees' life, family life, that they were all together, they practiced spiritual life, but there was always difference of opinion. Among them also. Somebody didn't like it, like the father belonged to one generation, the children belonged to the second generation, and they questioned what the father has discussed or thought about or decided was not in agreement with their mind. So this problem will happen in family life. That's why it says like that. So, and in that relationships also, the father will expect a lot from the wife and the children because he feels that he is in that state where he expects that the position and the honor or respect or whatever that is going to associate with that. So, all these things, Upanishad's point is this. Pure existence is concerned is only consciousness. In that consciousness,
different names and forms have come about, and you have superimposed all these designations on that, and you are suffering from that. This is the principle. So long as we leave our pure identity as the soul, see how much problem it brings about. Not only it brings a problem of with the say identity with nationality, language, race, body and all that. Apart from that, even in a peaceful state like in the family life also, you have to deal with this samsara material existence. So there, the point what is mentioned here is that all the desires that comes with us, say father expects something, the mother expects something from the children. In the modern times, parents complain, the children have no affection, they have no feeling for us, they are leaving home and going away, and then they don't care, they are all selfish. Many parents say like this, that they are all looking for money and they don't want anything else, this kind of thing. Why has this happened? We start, and then the parents get depressed. In the life, they get depressed. They start thinking, oh, I worked all my life and looked after the family, and this is what they have done to us. And then they feel regret about that. So, but it is not proper to think that entering into family life means that you are going to have a lot of happiness in material life. That's the first misunderstanding. When we enter into family life, it is due to prarabdham. It's prarabdham that draws people together, and there is other element also that through that Krishna has to get us out of this to create some vairagyam inside. That is the principle. Krishna is behind everything. So when that has to happen, family life gets into, when that is required. If you have no family vasana or vasanas for family life, Krishna will get you through this world without too much hustle, without too much effort. Anyway, the important thing here is that because we identify as individual units and away from the bodham, bodham means that pure awareness, as the frame from our bodham or consciousness from which all other consciousnesses come about and accepted different bodies and different names, as long as it's there, that the after effect that has come from that is called samsaram. So samsaram, you have to understand this word properly, what samsaram means. You see, we sing this song in the morning in the group, in the Mangalarati, isn't it? Samsara dhavan analita loka. People often wonder what this word samsaram means. Some people think that samsara means that material existence, that's the English translation is material existence. What is this material existence? Material existence means that some people think, this is some devotees' understanding, material existence means that, oh, I got a material body, I have to take birth, death, old age, disease. That's all. That's all how they understand this material existence. No. Material existence means, ever since we have lost that Krishna consciousness, what we are, or we have lost our identity, as soon as you have accepted a body, all that miseries you create centered around this body in your life, especially in the householder life with family members, in relationship with each other, not knowing what my real identity is. Because when you deal with the son, wife, family members, it's not on a spiritual platform. It's always on a bodily platform, isn't it? So all that interaction and all the after effects of all that is called samsaram. It's called samsaram. See how powerful that word samsaram is. Samsaram means this, that it is not simply birth, death, old age and disease or material body. Ever since we lost our identity as spirit souls and we have fallen away from that consciousness, which is pure Krishna consciousness originally as the soul, we've fallen from that, accepted this material body, identified with it and took a name and a form like this. In that, inside a mind, in that there is an intelligence, an ego, everything. All these packed up together and living in a family life to gratify my senses or control my mind, whatever way you want to address it. And in that interaction, all that is happening inside the family among members, plus the interaction with the world outside, everything total is called samsara. That is why it is called samsara dhavan analitha loka. Dhavanalam. Dhavanalam means it's like a forest fire, isn't it? The household life is a forest fire. All the time it's burning. It's always burning. When, what will happen, nobody knows. You try, every day is going, oh, at least one more day is over, one more day is over. You live in that way, isn't it? All of us live like that. One more day is over. Tomorrow what will happen? Don't know. Well, who is going to bring the next a problem in the family? How it will all develop? You don't know. So we have to always be conscious of this. It's not too bad when the family life starts in the beginning. Everything is very gory. And then only as time goes on and children come along and then they get educated and then they start growing up, then all the other problems associated start coming up. And we are still trying to hold on everything together, thinking that it will work. It will not work. That is why it said, samsara dhavan analitha loga tranaya karunya khanakanatvam praptasya kalyana unarnavasya vande guru shri charanarvindam. The spiritual master's duty is to make aware of all these things to a disciple and make him very conscious that if a problem comes up in household life, don't panic. It will be there. It's meant for that, to panic only. And so not to get panic, but rather come to the understanding properly, Krishna consciousness, and free oneself not to get disturbed over it. Rather accept that as the parabdham from life. That is why samsaram, it is mentioned like him. So the question is it possible to give up all these things? That will be the next question, isn't it? So in it is because of that, when it is spoken, first we clarify this point that we are not any of these things. It has to keep on hammering to ourselves. Na bhumir na toyam na tejo na vayu na kham nindriyam va na tesham samuha. That not bhumi, I'm not earth. Earth, water, air, ether, fire, what we say, what this body is made of. And na indriyam va na tesham samuha. Not even the senses, not even the combination of all these things. I am not any one of them. Any one of them. Na varnam na varnashram acharya dharmam namo dharana dhyana yoga adayobi. Apart from that, if you think that if I am not any of these things, am I belongs to one of these varnashramam? Brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya or shudra? Or varnashram na varnam na varnashram acharya dharmam. I am not any of this varnam, nor I belong to any of the varna dharmam or ashrama dharmam. Even that is not our dharmam. Even that is not our activities of the soul. People sometimes think like this, that, oh, because I am a brahmana, or I am a kshatriya, or I am a vaishya or a shudra, whatever it is, or they may think that, oh, I am a brahmachari. People identify like that, isn't it? Or sometimes people say, I am a grahastha, or I am a vanaprastha, or I am a sannyasi. Everyone likes to identify with something in this world, is it not? So, here what is mentioned is, you are not any of those material elements, number one. Number two, after these material elements are joined together, if you think that you are starting a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, you are none of that either. You are not one of, no, Varnam, you are not any of them. Varnashram, Ajara Dharmam, that is Brahmana Dharmam, Kshatriya Dharmam, Vaishya Dharmam, Shudram. None of them is yours. Namedharana Dhyana Yoga Adayobi. Then if you think that performing dharana, dhyanam, yogam, all other spiritual activities, so I don't need all of that. I don't need all of that. Why? Atma shayaham mama adhyasam sahanad. That all these are adhyasams on me. Adhyasam means superimpositions. They are all superimpositions on me. My pure identity is soul. Is soul. Na mata pita va na deva na lokam na veda na yajna na tirtha bhruvandi. I am neither father nor mother. I am not a demigod, nor I belong to this world. Neither vedam or yajnas or tirtham. None of them, they are related with me in any way. Why? Why is it like that? Because in deep sleep, none of them exist. As soon as you go into deep sleep, all this is finished. Varnam finished, ashram finished, dharmam finished. Everything is, what to talk about? There is no difference between man and woman in deep sleep. isn't it? See how this material body has put us and into a complex situation. And if you keep remembering that, then you will know automatically how to free yourself from this bondage. That's why it says, na mata pidava, na deva, na loka, na veda, na yajnam, na tirtha bruvandi. Vedam, Vedas, yajnam, sacrifices, or any holy places. As soon as you go into deep sleep, what holy place exists at that time? Holy places also is finished. Na sankhyam, na shaivam, na tatpancharatram. Then somebody says, I am a Shaivite. Somebody says, I am a Vaishnava. Somebody says, I am a Jnani or a Sankhyam philosopher, follower of Sankhyam. Somebody says, I am a Jain. Somebody says, I am a Mimamsaka. Mimamsaka means the who follows the Karmagandam. So, na Sankhyam, na Shaivam, na tatpancharatram. None of them is my pure nature, isn't it? I am not, when I came here, or any one of us came here, we didn't come here as any one of these. We are not Shaivite, we are not Vaishnavite, we are nothing. Actually, in pure state, we are spirit soul. We are not Jainas, we are not Hindus, we are not this, we are not that. This is all superimpositions on the soul, in some form or the other. Then, so, like this, everything is rejected first. Everything is rejected first. So that is the first principle. Everything is rejected. When self-realization happens, what happens to us is that it is that same truth manifesting in different forms in front of us, a Shaiva, Vaishnava, Jaina, Hindu, Muslim, Christian, all this is manifesting after self-realization. We'll come to that. This is how that thing works. Initially, none of them is our identity. We have to reject all of them. Because we are none of that. But after self-realization, when we relate with this world, it will be like this. That they are also manifestations of the same truth. Same truth. So this is the principle. Therefore, highly advanced devotees, when they reach that state, what will they see? That they will not relate inside the family in the same way as they did before. For example, husband thinks I am the husband, wife thinks I am the wife, or father thinks I am the father, mother thinks I am the mother, children thinks we are the child. Among the children also there will be politics. The elder one will say I am the elder one, the younger one will say I am the younger one, so I must get a higher treatment. All these things will happen. You can't do anything about it. And then parents find it difficult how to sort the issue. So therefore everybody says there will be one or two children is enough. In India, they put that slogan very openly. Do ya teen bache bas. They say like that, isn't it? In China, it's only one. They say two now. So, anyway. But when there are children, 8 or 10 children, there will be always different thinking among them also, isn't it? And they will all drag in different directions. So, what is important thing is here that if somebody in that family, if they have this understanding of Ishavanishad, this first mandram, then it is possible to bring some peace there. How? Say one person among the family members who understands this Ishavanishad mandram. Say it is the husband or the first top man. He sees the family members. He doesn't see the wife anymore as wife. He has, as Upanishad says, Ishavasyam, Achadaniyam. He's not relating with the wife anymore as a controller, rather as Krishna's manifestation there in the family, in another form. If you can reach that state, then there is no fight anymore. The fight is over. There cannot be, at least one fight is resolved between the husband and the wife. That if one person can see that realization all the time in their dealings with the other person. In the children case, it is difficult because they will not understand these principles. But among the grown-up adults, at least, if they take this Ishavasyam philosophy, Ishavasyam idam sarvam yat kincha jagatyam jagat, we have to cover everything with that principle. Otherwise, what will happen is, on little things, we will have problem. Because ego is working very, very strongly from inside. We will demand things. It has to be my way, not your way. then what will happen? Then we have to fight, isn't it? We have disagreements and arguments about it. What is Upanishads are telling us? Bring this knowledge into life. Otherwise, what is the point if I simply study the verses and keep it in my mind and to be told to someone else, but not applying that in your own life? If suddenly if an argument comes up at home, if this somehow remembering this verse inside, Ishavasyamidam Sarvam, you won't see the wife anymore as your enemy, or anymore that ill feeling what is inside will suddenly disappear. Ishavasyamidam Sarvam. Everything is Krishna who is present. Krishna is present in front of us, in front of me, in this form. And that is Prarabdham has decided that Krishna wants to be in that form in front of me. Ishavasyamidam Sarvam. So with that one line alone, Ishopanishad is going to tell us something so important. So like this, if you start seeing the father seeing the wife, husband seeing the wife, the children, and everyone in the house in that way, imagine that situation, what will be then? If a father is able to see, the husband is able to see the wife, the children, and any other family members in that way, then immediately that it is Ishavasyam Idam Sarvam. Ishavasyam Idam Sarvam. So, so if we start doing that as Ishvara, Krishna's present in everything, that then that will not be samsaram for us. It will not be samsara material existence. What that does not bind us to anything. This is the same point Krishna talks to Uddhava in a much larger scale in the end of Ekadasha Skandam. We will come to and discuss that in depth at that point. How important it is that if you want to go in the spiritual direction, you have to learn how to cut all these connections in a nice way. Not abruptly walk away from home or break away everybody and disturb everyone's mind and leave. You have to learn how to cut it in a nice way, the connections, by changing the understanding inside with the world. Inside the, we have to say goodbye to everything in this world one day or the other, isn't it? Our so-called family, friends, society, country, whatever relations we have, everything one day morning we go. From here, leaving everything. But Krishna's point is, if you do it in a nice way while living in this world, before that happens, if you have already cut off inside that connection, then at the time of death, this will not become a problem. This world won't be a problem. Otherwise, this world will become a problem at the time of death. Most of us, that's what happens, isn't it? Time of death, it holds back everything back to us. So that's why it says here. So, remember this, anything that is binding us to this world is Maya, is Maya in any form. One stage, what we think is Maya today, at some other stage, it will become as a manifestation of Ishvara. It's a manifestation of Ishvara. So that we have to review ourselves. We have to do that within ourselves, this understanding. We have to create, we have to evaluate within ourselves, relationship with each everybody else in this world, and try to modify in this situation in the way Krishna has spoken here. So, what that drags us into material existence more and more, whatever may be that relationships, it is. So, why? Because there is another object outside, and what takes our attention outside, and what stands against our Swarupam. Swarupam means our pure identity, that's all Maya. Everything else is, all that is Maya. Anything that takes our attention away from our Swarupam. Our Swarupam means our spiritual identity. Or anything that gives attention to some other object in this world outside, and what goes against our Swarupam, and whatever stands like that, that is Maya. So, what is the state of a sannyasi then? Isn't it? What's the state of a sannyasi? A sannyasi state, as far as the Shastram is concerned, has to be in this state, a sannyasi. That he has to be in that realized state, already in that way. In other words, If he is creating ragadvesham in this world, kartrutva boktrutvam in this world, he is operating in that way. And he is also not knowing his own identity and realizing that it's only prajna. And one who has come to that state, even if he is not a sannyasi, he is a jnani. Even if he is not a sannyasi, he is a jnani. So, even if you try to stay in that state, what will happen is, due to our own ignorance, as we call as the force of prarabdham, something will come and fall on us at that time. Jnani's state we are discussing now. That in the jnani's consciousness, in that state, even if you try to escape from all this and try to retain that state of mind, and even in that state, due to our own ignorance, because it is avidya there all the time operating, isn't it? That avidya suddenly will trip the whole thing away, balance will go, and immediately will identify with something and get caught up in that. So, something... ignorance in us. It is called Moola Avidya. You know what Moola Avidya means? Avidya, ignorance also is classified in different ways. Moola Avidya means that ignorance in us which created us. You see? There is ignorance in us. See, everything is in a very subtle level spoken. There is already an ignorance in us in the form of vasanas existing. And that has created us in this body, in this particular form. Isn't it? So that is the very root of the whole thing, and that is called Moola Avidya. Moola Avidya means the root avidya, the very root of it. So that Moola Avidya has come already in this form of body. That means it is absolutely clear that there is a lot of avidya in us. The body has come out, isn't it? So Moola Avidya, Moola Avidya has created the material body. For example, suppose I had stomach problems yesterday, and then I start thinking, I haven't eaten anything. What has caused the upset? What upset me? I didn't eat anything. I can only remember going back for a day, or probably 2 days, what I have eaten. Third day, I can't remember what I have eaten. Isn't it? All of us, it's like that. We can't remember every single day what we have eaten throughout life, can we? At least not even this year what we have eaten, we don't remember. Not even a month or a week even, what we have eaten. So what do we think? When this happens, when the stomach gets upset, I start thinking, what did I eat wrong? Where things have gone wrong? So at that time, then we start realizing, maybe 2 or 3 days before I ate this, maybe it could be that has caused this problem. We cannot find out straight away what actually has. We may speculate at that time. I've eaten this 3 days ago. Probably that's what has caused. 2 days ago I ate this. Maybe that has caused. Something, we will start speculating on that. Not precisely able to say, this is exactly what has happened. Similarly, we can also see in our life that that where this has whole thing started, we don't know. Where this whole thing has started. Just like we have eaten many, many days, but suddenly one day you got sick. And you are thinking that some particular food has caused that. Actually, it is not like that. Something was developing in somewhere in the body. Nobody understands this body, what goes on inside. So suddenly some illness comes and we start thinking, oh, I've eaten that, therefore I got sick. But actually it is not like that. So many years we were eating so many different kinds of food. Why now this has happened? But doctors will say, just to keep us satisfied or to keep us in peace, they will say, you have eaten this particular food or this food doesn't suit you, don't eat that. He may put some restrictions on you. That's only a temporary solution to the problem. The main problem is that certain vasanas inside from previous lifetimes, which is called Moola Avidya, from Moola Avidya it has already created a body and left you in that body. From there itself the problem has started. Now, after coming to this body, different problems are developing. All the control is inside that vasana, not in the food what you eat here. Inside that vasana inside. Say, for example, say I have an attachment for a particular type of food. Now, attachment, I may say that, oh, I don't eat that food, a large quantity, a small quantity I'll eat. But if I have very strong desire in me inside, in vasana, even I have eaten a small quantity of food, I will be dissatisfied. If I only eat so much quantity, I'll be satisfied and fulfill that vasana. Isn't it? So you are eating the food in a dissatisfied mood, which will also cause problems. So you can't win either way. The vasanas are so powerful inside, from a subtle level they are controlling us at every point. So in the same way, that the life itself is a whole life, is a challenge for us between our vasanas and the world. Vasanas are pulling from the world everything. We are constantly trying to keep a peace within this powerful force that's coming out from there. So, therefore, the answer to that is it possible to convert the whole thing, samsaram, into Bhagavad Swarupam, to Krishna's manifestation? This is the challenge in front of us. This is what life is all about. Can we convert our life as Krishna's manifestation of everything? Everyone, whether they are friend or enemy, doesn't matter. Whomever we come into contact with, not to put this cover of enemy or friend on them, rather see them that Krishna has come in that form in front of us. Due to some prarabdham, some problem is always happening. But not to give importance to that, rather importance to that Krishna's presence in that living entity. If we do that, Krishna says that Ishavasimidam Sarvam. Everything gets covered as Krishna. Otherwise, in fact, you can see that everything in the Vedic system is to get this point through. All our rituals are centered around this. There is this thing called Sumangali Puja. That means fresh girl who is getting married, she is worshipped there. And there is also Dambadi Puja. A couple, they are worshipped there. All these different Satyanarayana Puja. So many things you will see in the Vedic system, different traditions. So why do they do all that? Somehow to bring divinity into everything, to bring the Shishavasim into it. Otherwise it will not happen. We will see everything connected with Krishna somehow or the other. For Vedic system and from the Rishi's point of view, unless you bring everything in connection with Krishna, it is impossible to cover everything with Krishna. So this is the principle behind it. Sometimes you will see young little girls, they are worshipped on a Satyanarayana Puja day, isn't it? Why do they do that? Just to bring some divinity into that, her life. And similarly, old people are worshipped. For this one reason only, that to bring Ishavasyam Idam Sarvam. Ishavasyam Idam Sarvam. So all karmam, all activities, rituals are divine from the Vedic point of view. Karmedi upasthayoho, gadiridi padayoho, vimuktiridi payo. That means that we think that all forces are worldly, isn't it? Worldly forces, pranan or energy, everything like that. So when we start seeing everything in connection with Krishna, then we wake up. And at that time, we experience happiness inside. If we want any problem with another person or another individual to close peacefully without any ill feelings each other, it can only be done if it is through Ishavasyam Idam Sarvam. Otherwise, it won't happen. There will be always, it will grow further. And many, many devotees have done this in the history. There are so many devotees who have done this. And if you understand the devotees' dealings with this world, only then you take notice of it. This is what they have understood from Krishna consciousness. They were not 24 hours busy in the temple with the deity. That's not what their life was about. In Pandharpur, there is a famous story. So, there was one devotee, he was a devotee of Vithal, and he will not go to the temple. And he maintained a huge garden where he grew vegetables. All kinds of vegetables he grew in the garden. And fruits, everything, flowers, all kinds of things he grew there. So, you know this, they have written these abhangs, the Maharashtrian saints, Janeshwar, Namadev, Tukaram, they are called abhangs. He has written abhang about this particular devotee. There was a group of devotees at a particular time in the history, they appeared in the Maharashtra, and they sang glorious songs about Krishna, about Panduranga Vithal, at that time, and they were not highly educated people in the sense they came from different backgrounds in life, but highly advanced devotees, and their realizations are sung and recited and glorified by the many devotees. From time immemorial there had been that connections with the world. So this particular devotee, he won't go to the temple. He was busy in his garden all the time. So one day Namadevan Jnaneshwar came that way. Namadevan Jnaneshwar was a great devotee at that time. They came through that way and they were going to the temple to see Vithal. And when they were going there, when they saw went to the temple, they couldn't see Vithal there in the temple. Now, you may think how that is. That is how it is. That means, in the temple, great devotees, when they go, they can see the Krishna present there, in full life, present in the temple. We see the form, isn't it, of the marble, or we see the marble, or we talk about the clothes what Krishna is wearing. And or the very best what we'll do is bring the latest mobile and get one of the photos and take it away and send it in the web to everybody. This is what we do. This is not, we are supposed to do all these things. We're supposed to see Krishna there in that deity. But instead our attraction is towards the deity's dress and deity's jewelry and deity's hat and deity's whatever other things are deity has got. And thinking that where do we got that from? But what I'm saying is that great devotees, when they go to the temple, like Vilumangalam's case also is very evident, all these things. Many great personalities, when they go to the temple, they will see Krishna there. They just don't see the deity because they have reached that state. Anyway, Jnaneshwar and Namadev went to Pandharpur in the temple. They didn't see Vithal there. So they were looking and they could see there at that time in the large field, they have put, you know, boundaries at different places to break them into squares where they were in the garden. So through one of those boundary line, Vithal was walking through that towards this garden where this devotee was growing the vegetables. Namadev, when Jnaneshwar saw this, Vithal was walking along that route on this, what do you call it, the bund or something, which is in between two fields, they create that, isn't it? And Vithal was walking alone, very happily towards going towards this vegetable garden. He says, so there, when he went there, he saw this, he was having conversation with this devotee there in the garden. Bhagavadam, there is a verse there. Nirabeksham munim shandam naruvairam samadarshinam anuvrajamyaham nityam. Krishna is saying that Uddhava, I go to such devotees. They don't come and visit me, I go to them. What kind of devotee is Niravaksham? This particular devotee, he has no questions to ask. He has no desire from anything from Vithal. No was looking for anything from Vithal. Niravaksham munim shandam, always in that peaceful state. Nirvairam samadarshinam, he has no enemies. Why? Ishavasividam sarvam, all realizations. Niravairam samadarshinam, because ishavasividam sarvam, samadarshinam everywhere, all equal vision. Anubrajam yaham nityam, I have to go and visit those devotees, Krishna says. I go after them. Because if I don't go, I feel unhappy if I don't go and see them. This is Krishna's position. Nirabeksham munim shandam nirvairam samadarshinam anuvrajam yaham nityam. And what do? After going there, I take the dust from their feet and put it on my own head. Puyeye tyangri renubi, so that I can get purified by their purity. This is how Krishna is in relationship with these devotees. Krishna, he says this, that any devotee or a jnani who is in that state, has come to that state, then I don't have any problem. They are mine then. I live in them, they live in me. There is no separation from them. So, this tenatyaktvena bunjidaha, such a devotee, ishavasimidam sarvam, who has come to that state, then he has tenatyaktvena bunjidaha. that he doesn't need anything from this world. Imagine that state. He doesn't want anything from this world, and everything he is giving up, by giving up, he is enjoying it. Simply by recognizing, this is Krishna's, this is Krishna's, this is Krishna's, the garden is Krishna's, all the vegetables, whether it was karela, bhindi, or whatever he was growing, it's all Krishna's for him. It's not his anymore. That is that word tenetektvena bunchita means. Tenetektvena bunchita means, a person who has come to the state of Ishavasamidam Sarvam, he is seeing everything in this world is Krishna's. Whatever he thought it was his, it's not anymore his. He has handed over everything to Krishna. It is all yours. I am just doing it. Tenetektvena bunchitaha. Such a person, Krishna can't refuse him anything. And that relationship is so high that Krishna says that I have to make sure that that person is always complete and satisfied all the time. So our problem is that when we take from Krishna and rather try to keep ourselves in control of everything, we have a problem. When we recognize that Ishavastimidam Sarvam properly, you cannot do nothing but tena tektvena bunjidaha. You have to hand over everything back to Krishna. So the handing over back to Krishna is tena tektvena bunjidaha, and covering everything with Krishna is Ishavastimidam Sarvam, which is exactly what Srimad Bhagavatam is telling us. There is practically no difference. Ishopanishad and Srimad Bhagavatam is pointing out the only one and one thing alone. So it is a beautiful state of consciousness, what that person was talking about. Sannyasam is that state. Sannyasam is that state. Generally, in the Vedic, traditionally, when sannyasam is spoken in the ashrams and all in the institutions, there are two kinds, vidvat sannyasam and vividisha sannyasam, that is called. Vidvat sannyasam means, say, suppose you are a grihastha or a brahmachari or a vanaprastham, you have cultivated spiritual life and ultimately you have realized the truth, and for you, then you don't need sannyasam after that. If you realize the truth, what do you need the sannyasam for? But for the sake of the benefit of this world, you will wander around in this world in the form of in some dress, in a sannyasi's dress. But still, because you are in an aishkaramyam state, aishkaramyam state means this realization is more important than the dress. If there is no realization, simply formed by the dress all the time, if you keep looking at the dress and start making decisions based on the dress, like often you can see this among the among devotees also, we start thinking, oh, somebody has taken sannyas and and sannyasa mantram was given, a big ceremony has happened, and nowadays even reporters and TV also comes to report your sannyasam into the television. So even that is happening now. But that's another thing. And then sannyasam approval and all these kind of things are going on nowadays. But that's not correct, because sannyasam is not like that. Sannyasam is, first thing in sannyasam is this realization. Ishavasyamidam sarvam yatkincha jagatyam jagat. Once he has reached that state, then he is stayed in state of naishkarmam, naishkarma siddhi, as it is mentioned like that. He is not qualified for any more karmam. Karmam is not allowed. Just like a jnani also, when he is realized the soul, he doesn't have any karma. So then why does he take sannyasam? The answer to that is given like this. For example, he doesn't have any obligations in this life after taking sannyasam, isn't it? After taking sannyasam, like sandhyavandanam or any other shraddham, things like that. He doesn't have any obligations or any other anushtanam. So, but sometimes it can happen like this. After you have taken sannyasam, say your daughter is getting married. That stage also can happen. In life, all these things can happen. So, if you have to get involved in that marriage, somehow that is not prevented. It can happen. And if you have to get involved in that marriage, so he may have to think sometimes outside the realized state. He may have to come out of it. So, and because if you have to do like that, at that point, suppose you are getting your daughter married, the father has to think, oh, after all, I am the father. And after all, he'll think, oh, it's my daughter who is getting married. So immediately what has happened? You've fallen from that state of self-realization, isn't it? So, but if you are a householder, there is no problem. You can do, let the world think what they think. After all, I'm not a sannyasi, what does it matter? You can say like that. I have no problem at all. So, he can withdraw, but in the householder life also, as a realized soul, you can conduct all this business. Isn't it? Householder life, as a realized soul, you can conduct the marriage of your daughter or son or whatever, and that you can do, but so long as you remain in that state of self-realization. Remain in the state of self-realization. There are people who have done like that. And he is going to stay in that state. So, he will withdraw from that and remain in his state all the time. And there were many people who have lived like this. Just like a fruit, when it becomes fully ripe, it will drop on its own, isn't it? And that time, they will take sannyasam and go. They'll take sannyasam and go. So I am galidam, fallen on their own. So, similarly, some people after taking sannyasam, they have left their connections with the family or the world, and they will wander around in this world without any connection anywhere. But generally, that sannyasa ashram demands or expects that this realization inside strongly. Otherwise, that sannyasam will be just a burden in this world. Sometimes people will ask, if you don't have the realization, what will happen is, people will ask the question that, why are you not doing anything in this world? Young man, if he takes sannyas and travels in a train in India, most of the people will think that person is either lazy or he's just trying to live at the cost of others. This is quite common. And now what's happened? All the sannyasis fly everywhere, so ordinary people don't even see them. So it has come that way. But many times this does happen. And not only happened to ordinary people. Sannyasis like Vivekananda had to go through that. When he was traveling by train from Calcutta to Delhi once, say the train reached Allahabad, so there was someone who was sitting next to him, and he started asking him, what a shame, he said. At such a young age, you are wandering around in this world without doing any work and just simply wants to live at the cost of others. This comment will come when some young people take sannyas like that. People will ask this question, why does he not work? And they also know that they don't have that state of self-realization already, that they have taken sannyasam that way. So you are giving a chance to the society to criticize, isn't it? To criticize. Why curse? Get cursed by others unnecessarily. So this is quite common. This is not an unusual thing. So that's why it says here, when you come to that sannyasam state, it should happen in a particular way. The world should not look down upon you anymore as that a source of anxiety for others. Rather, they should know that there is much to come from that person to this world. Otherwise, it's no good. So that is why sannyasashram, many people, very learned people, they delay it as much as possible. They don't jump into it without thinking that, oh, tomorrow I can be a sannyasi, let me get in the list today, if I can make it tomorrow. And the next thing is a guru and move further from there up in the ladder. Like a career building business goes on. Like, this is all nonsense. It's no meaning at all. This is not spiritual. It's a completely material mind working behind it. So that's the thing. So, why I was saying all these things was, there is a thing called Vidvat Sannyasam. This is the first type of sannyasam. Vidvat Sannyasam means, maybe a brahmachari, maybe a grihastha, doesn't matter. But in their ashram, they lived properly. Properly means, did very minimum what was necessary, so that you don't get criticized from the society. In such a way, you conducted your business in that ashram. Simultaneously, you developed your Krishna consciousness and spiritual understanding and realization to such a high level that none of these things in this world bothers you anymore. In other words, you have come to that platform of self-realization so well. Even as a householder, even as a brahmachari, it is possible. It has happened to many, many people. It's not a new thing. For such people, before they leave their body, simply as a token of recognition of their position, sannyasam is offered to them. And that is called Vidvat Sannyasam. We know many people like that. They took sannyasam at 91, 92 age. They took sannyasam at that. Up to that point, they were in the householder life. Sometimes it happens their wife dies and goes away. Or because by the time you are 90, the chances are both living together is very little, isn't it? Then instead of becoming a burden on the world to show that I am a sannyasi, they still remained as a householder. But the realizations they had were so high, and the spiritual advancement was so high, the society or from the ashramam or the mutt, as a mark of respect towards them, before they leave their body, perhaps a year or sometimes 2 years, the head of the mutts or from the ashram, somebody will approach them and request them to take sannyas, and sannyasam is offered to them. That is called vidyut sannyasam. Vidyut sannyasam means that already they have reached the stage. The realization is already there. Qualified spiritually every way. And last thing, the ritual is offered. Nowadays what it is? First ritual is offered, then struggle the rest of the life to get qualified. Is it not? Yes or no? If that's what we find. Everyone is rushing towards it, as though I have to get there first. I got it now in my hand. Now nobody can say anything. And sometimes what happens, after 20, 30 years, it's all boring, this sannyasam business. Let me go and get married and live nicely. This is also happening, isn't it? We've seen this all the time. And sometimes, so those who are giving sannyasam also should know these things. What is the rush in this world to do all these things? The feeling is that this sannyasa ashram, people like Shankaracharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they can take sannyasam because they have come with this big mission in their life. They have come with something to teach to this world. But I don't think all of us have come to this world to teach this world something. We have been sent here by the powerful force of that karma that has pushed us out from here. And instead, also we don't have to become an acharya here. There's no need for that. There's no urgency for that, is there? So, let karmam take its own role, toll. But important thing is, the point is this, vidvat sannyasam means, come to the state of that realization from the through the spiritual life. After reaching that state, the ceremony is performed. Normally, in the traditionally, when sannyasam is given, the kashayam dress is given to them, along with that, the dry ginger, and then there is another thing, I don't know what it's English called, it's a bitter fruit. Few things are offered along with that. It's only a simple ceremony, it's not such a complex ceremony, but sannyasam is offered like that. But important consideration there is the person qualified? Has he reached that state of consciousness of naishkarmyam? And self-realization has happened to him or not, that's more important. Not the dress. Not the dress. Just changing this dhoti to saffron is not going to make a big difference, isn't it? So, that is the important thing. So, why vidyut sannyasam means he will not give trouble to anybody in the society anymore. So, now the other one, vidisha sannyasam. Vidisha sannyasam means because he know what the goal is. And at the same time, he has no taste for material life anymore. A stage comes like that in people's life, isn't it? That sometimes it happens that he has no taste for material life. He has no taste for material life. So for such people, but at the same time, he also knows the goal, but he hasn't reached that state. So Upanishads are saying that they also take sannyas like many people do that in this world. And for him, there is a long way to go still to become the realizations to happen. So, but Upanishads are talking about that sannyasam, not about the dress at all. Upanishads are saying that Ishavasimidam sarvam yadkincha jagatyam jagat. If you have reached that state, you are a sannyasi. It's not your dress that decides whether you are a sannyasi, which institution has given you sannyasam, and from whom you took sannyasam, what kind of dandam you carry, yaga dandam or tridandam or this. All those are not the important factors. So, only seeing everything, ishavasamidam sarvam is sannyasam. Ishavasamidam sarvam is sannyasam. Only then it will become proper sannyasam. This is the principle of sannyasam. Only then it becomes sannyasam. Vidyut sannyasam is like that. Everything tyaktena, tyagena.
Tyagam, Sannyasam, these two words Krishna has linked very closely in the Bhagavad Gita. If you look in the 18th chapter, you will find. So, Jnanam, Sannyasa, Lakshanam. If you look, Ajari Swami's commentary on Bhagavad Gita is like that. Jnanam, Sannyasa, Lakshanam. Sannyasa, Lakshanam is Jnanam, knowledge and realization. Not only sannyasam, garhasthyam, household life, brahmachari life, vanaprastham life, nothing. Everywhere, the fruition of the perfection of all that is sannyasam. So, another addition to that, the important thing why varnashrama dharma is created like that is, if you have remained as a proper brahmachari or a proper grihastha, only then you can become a proper sannyasi. Only then you can become a proper sannyasi. Otherwise, your sannyas ashram will be always in trouble. It always go through a lot of turbulences. Sometime high, sometime low, and sometime... because once you reach that state, you should never think again going back to the family life or worldly life anymore. That means the transcending the whole mind, intelligence, ego to such levels of self-realization that once you come back again back to the mental platform and intellectual platform and attraction in this world, then it's not sannyasam. What sannyasam means then? Doesn't mean anything. That is why it is mentioned like that. So, a perfect sannyasi's life, we are talking about it here. So, that is why, if you look into Bhagavadam, you will see this. When Hari Maharshi said to Nimi, when he considered the kinds of devotees, three kinds of devotees, isn't it? Don't separate a devotee and sannyasi separately like that. Oh, sannyasi is a position and devotee is another kind of position. It's not like that. Devotee and sannyasis are same. A first-class devotee is a first-class sannyasi. And a first-class sannyasi is a first-class devotee. It has to be. These are all relationship with the body only, the sannyasam. So, if you look into Bhagavadam, when Hari Maharshi spoke about three types of devotees, he said that, Sarva bhudeshu yap pashet bhagavad bhavam atmana. Bhudani bhagavati esha savai bhagavadottama. He didn't say sannyasi. He says a first-class devotee is sarva bhudeshu yap pashet. In all living entities, he will only see bhagavad bhavam, Krishna's presence in there. He is seeing like that, bhagavad bhavam atmana. Bhudani bhagavati esha savai bhagavadottama. All bhudam, all living entities in this world, is Krishna is living in them, if he has come to that understanding. Sarva bhudeshu yapashyet bhagavad bhavam atmanaha. That means, in all living entities, he is seeing Krishna's presence in all of them. Bhudani bhagavati esha savai bhagavadottama. All living entities are living in Krishna. In other words, that awareness, consciousness inside, from there everything has come. They are all living entities are living in that consciousness, and that consciousness is spread in all the living entities, both ways, vice versa. The same consciousness from whom bodham, avabodham, from there everything has come. Isn't it? Awareness, we discussed this. You may think, why I'm bringing this issue again and again? Because that is from everything has started. And that is what we are inquiring after. All these Puranam stories, and the discussions, commentaries, bhashyams, everything is only to bring us to that particular understanding that there is the soul from them, from which, soul means consciousness, from where everything has come about in this world. Nothing else. Everything has come out from that. And devotees call it as Krishna. Jnanis call it as Brahman. Yogis call it as Paramatma. Vatandi dattvavidam dattvayajnanam advayam brahmedi paramatmedi bhagavaniti shabdhyade. That's all the differences. So, so the thing is that from there everything has come, from that consciousness, that is I. Sarva bhudeshu yappashet bhagavad bhavam atmana. Bhudani bhagavatyesha savai bhagavadottama. So a first class devotee is that person. Sarabhudeshu yapashet bhagavad bhavam atmana. Everywhere he is saying Krishna.
He is seeing Krishna. And all living entities are living in Krishna. What does that mean? We keep saying this. They see Krishna everywhere. Or in other words, Krishna is present in all living entities. All living entities are present in Krishna. It means this. That Krishna means that consciousness, the soul. In that soul, all living entities have come from that. And when we are aware of that, where is the question of feeling any kind of ill feeling towards another living entity? There is no question. But vyavaharam, there may be problems sometimes. But the knowledge has to stay inside. In vyavaharam, you have to do things, what the situation demands, you may have to do it. But that should not go inside and disturb that knowledge inside, realization inside. That's why that is Bhagavata Dharma. So, whether it is through a devotee's point you approach the knowledge, whether as a sannyasi you approach the knowledge, or as a jnani you approach the knowledge is the same, shared in three different planes, by three different groups, that's all. Knowledge is the same. What is that knowledge? Knowledge is this, that Sishavasavidam Sarvam, Ekkincha Jagatyam Jagat. And that's exactly what happens to a first class devotee, exactly what happens to a first class jnani, or exactly the same thing what happens to a first class sannyasi also. There is no difference at all in all their three cases. That's why all these things are important to remember, because otherwise we'll start reading one verse here and we'll say, oh, this is only for a devotee, not for a jnani or a sannyasi. Sannyasis have got some other thing mentioned in another chapter somewhere else. We'll say, like sometimes people read Bhagavatam and they say, oh, sannyasi dharma is mentioned in two places, where one in the 7th canto, in the 14th and 15th chapter, and then sannyasi dharma is mentioned in the varnashram dharma in the Ekadasha skandam also. So sannyasi only has to worry about that? No, sannyasi also, this realization has to be there. Otherwise Krishna says, don't rush into sannyasam if it's not happening there. These are states of development inside. Inner development is this. Not the external changing clothes. External changing, Krishna doesn't care at all about it, what clothes you wear on. It's not important thing at all. Inside change is more important. So, in such a person, can he perform karma? And especially in this competitive world where there's a rat race going on from morning to night, isn't it? So therefore, Bhagavatam answered that question in a nice way. If you want to answer that question, it's in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It says there that na kama karma bhijanam yasya chedasi sambhava vasudeva ega nilaya savai bhagavadottamaham. Na kama karma bhijanam yasya chedasi sambhava. People ask this question, oh, this is quite a very high state of consciousness. Is it possible to reach that state? And so therefore Hari Maharshi says here that it is possible, provided this knowledge gets in well. If it gets in well, it will have its effect on you. How? Na kama karma bhijanam yasya chedasi sambhavaha. That as much as kamya karma means fruitive activity, will slowly start leaving you. And that's why in the modern world it is much more difficult, we will say, because of the lifestyle we have, isn't it? What we have created, where we will talk about that. Na kami karma bijanam isa chedasi sambhava. And vasudeva nilaya savai bhagavadottama. If vasudeva nilaya, that means in every living entity, this vasudeva concept or Krishna's presence and is recognized or is it accepted, then it says here, Bhagavatam says like this, that it is possible that he can reach that state even in the middle of all these things. The world has become like this. This rat race is only a new thing, isn't it? How long has this been going? It's not going on for such a long time. Only with the development of technology has helped to increase the rat race. And before that, people all over the world didn't live a life in the way that they are living today, isn't it? The desires for bodily comforts and bodily needs have increased, and the rat race have begun from that. So say for example that if there is a na kamya karma bhijanam isse chedasi sambhava, let's look at that way. So suppose there is any desire-oriented action. If it is a slight trace, it is existing inside. It cannot happen. If there is a slight desire existing inside. Because if it is there, he is not a jnani. Suppose any desire for wealth or fame or positions in this world or recognitions in this world, and any even a slightest amount of desire for that purpose in this world, then he is not peaceful inside. He is not peaceful inside. And that therefore he is not swastham. Swastham means one who is peacefully situated. He is called pragradistham. Pragradistham means he is under the control of the pragradi, if he is in the pragradi. So these two things cannot happen to him. These two things cannot happen to him. None of these above mentioned issues should happen. Which what was that? Sthanamanam. Sthanamanam means the recognition, the position in this world, desire for money, desire for fame, desire for followers, or desire for any recognition in this world. All these things, if he leaves from him, while he is engaged in all these rat race in this world, then he is a jnani. He is a jnani. But rat race won't allow you to do that. Rat race will, day after day, the more we get closer to this rat race, you will completely fall into that race and get trapped there. That's why it is mentioned like that. But Upanishads are saying like that. Swarubastaha swastaha. As long as you are in your swarupam, you are swastham. The moment you lose your swarupam, you are aswastham. Isn't it? Or pragratistham. You are in the control of pragrati. Swarubastaha swastaha. You are in the swarupam state, you are in the steady state. You will not be disturbed about that. So, so then the people will ask the question, if one has to come to that state, it's like a vegetable, isn't it? That you have nothing you can do in this world. Is it like that? No, it's not like that. Why? With gold, have you noticed? With pure gold, you can't manufacture any jewelry. Isn't it? There's always a little amount of, what do they call it, impurity in the gold. Isn't it? So little impurity will always be there. So similarly, with jnanis also, they compare it like this with the gold. Just like gold cannot be used for manufacturing any jewelry in its very pure form, completely pure gold, it cannot be used for manufacturing jewelry. Similarly, jnanis also, even if they have reached a very high state of self-realization, there will be some impurity left in them. And it's because of that impurity, they are able to conduct the business in this world. Remember Sunday we talked about Hanuman's story. Hanuman, there's no question of self-realization, talked about Hanuman, isn't it? I mean, he could even teach Krishna about Bhagavad Gita. He was such a personality. And that, but because in that state, in the Anjaneya Swami's position is like that, that suddenly some vasana from inside came out and started acting when he saw Mandodari. Remember that? I mentioned last Sunday. Anjaneya Swami looking for Sita Devi, went to Sri Lanka, went to Ravana's palace, and in Ravana's palace, he saw so many beautiful women everywhere, and there is a description running chapter after chapter in the Sundaragandam, if you look. Sundaragandam in the Ramayanam is considered to be the most attractive canto. There's about six cantos, and Sundaragandam is the most attractive canto. Because it is in that canto, Hanuman goes to Sri Lanka and finds Sita Devi and brings the message, the good news to Ramachandra that he has met Sita and all that, isn't it? All that story is there. That. And also burning of Lanka. All this is in that Sundaragandam. It's called Sundaragandam, beautiful kandam it is. So when Hanuman went there, there is a his experiences in Sri Lanka first. After he got there, and then what did he see? He saw Ravana's palace. When he saw the palace, Hanuman was so impressed with the palace, the opulence of the place. Never Hanuman says, I've seen a palace like the Hanuman used to live in the forest, isn't it? For in the Hrishamugachalam with Sugriva, he was living there. So when he saw this opulence in Ravana's palace, he was in a real shock, the state of life, what Ravana was living there. Ravana was living there. So, Hari Bol. So, when he saw that, the situation, his mind was very clear that he was looking for Sita Devi. Many places, musical concerts were going on. And all these beautiful women, Ravana's wives and other people, they were all dressed so gorgeously, looking so opulent. The gold was everywhere, in everything. And the facilities in the palace were extraordinary. Hanuman was completely in a shock when he saw the facilities in Ravana's palace. Valmiki says he was not shocked. Why? Because who is Ravana? Ravana has come from the spiritual world, isn't it? Jayavijaya, they were there. Ravana and Kumbhakarna, these two brothers, come from Vaikuntham. Vaikuntham means what? Opulence. So Krishna has made sure that when they come here, they should not be short of anything, as far as opulence is concerned. Maybe Krishna has come to kill them, that's another thing. But because they were his servants, if they lack anything here, that is something lacking in Krishna's popularity, isn't it? For Krishna's, it will have a, people will say, if they were Krishna's servants, later on, Bhagavatam will be spoken. And people will start thinking about Krishna's servants have come from Vaikuntham, what kind of life they had here. And people start saying that, oh, they were not very opulent when they were in this world. That's a bad thing for remark on Krishna. So Krishna didn't want that. So what Krishna made sure was that when Ravana and Kumbhakarna lived here, they had the best of all the material opulences were given to them. Krishna's arrangement. Krishna treats them like that. Krishna doesn't treat devotees like beggars, like we do. So Krishna treats them properly, in the proper way. So they had all the opulences. More than in Dwaraka, Ravana had opulences. If you read Ramayanam, if you read Bhagavatam and compare the opulences, you can't even compare the opulences of Dwaraka's opulences compared to Ravana's opulences. It was just the kind of opulence he had. So anyway, the Ravana there, and Hanuman is looking for everywhere for Sita Devi, and he couldn't find Sita Devi anywhere. Moved around a lot of places, couldn't find anywhere. And wherever he saw, what he saw was, he was thinking, is this Sita? Is this Sita? He was looking at different women because they were so beautiful. And they were dressed so well. Then he was also thinking, if it was Sita Devi, she should be at least looking a little bit depressed, because being separated from Ramachandra, but none of them were depressed either. They were all looking extraordinarily happy and jubilant and blissful in the palace. So he kept on looking, moving from one room to another, one room to the palace, in so many big, huge palace. Now, ultimately, he found the Ravana's interior courts. And there he saw this beautiful woman there, Mandodari, sitting there. Hanuman didn't know it was Mandodari. Hanuman misunderstood it was Sita Devi. Can you imagine? So he thought, Sita Devi, I have seen Sita Devi. Hanuman thought like that. And up to that point, Hanuman, who is a great realized soul, jnani, and also a great personality in all aspects, and who what we call as the Sthita Prajna state in the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, that state of mind, who had it, he lost it at that point. And he started jumping. First thing he did was he caught hold of his tail and started kissing that as a mark of his happiness. That's how the monkeys do, isn't it? I don't know if you have observed monkeys carefully. They do like that. They will catch hold of the tail and they will start kissing the tail when they feel some great pleasure, or they get something nice to eat, or if they manage to snatch something out of your hand. And like that, so he did. So then the next thing, he started jumping up and down inside that room where Mandodari was sitting there, and made a few somersaults like the monkeys jump, do turn around and all that. All kinds of things he did there. Valmiki says there, Kapi, a monkey, can you change his habit? He says, can you change his vasana anytime? So, in order to tell us that there will be a little bit left behind in all of us, even if you, it's not that 100% will be perfect when self-realization happens. No, there will be a little bit of ajnanam, avidya inside, so that that keeps us going in this world. We'll be still be able to do some, a certain amount of karma in this world. And that is what encourages us to engage in karma. So, that's what it is mentioned here. So, otherwise it will be very, very difficult. Very, very difficult. So, as long as this vasanas inside, and we have a lot of karma tendency, karma vasanas inside, and ragadvesham inside, and ignorance also along with that, samsaram, ignorance is all inside, and even if we want to come out of it, it is not very easy to come out. So, those who are managed to come out to a large extent, there will be still the influence of the field in them. But if somebody has managed to escape from this world completely, and by their purity, and by their renunciation, and by the knowledge, by his escaping from this world, it's not going to cause any problem to others. I'm saying this is, quite often we say, if somebody takes to spiritual life very seriously, we get very concerned about it, isn't it? You know that? That we'll say, slow down a bit, there's no rush, isn't it? Parents get very worried when children take to spiritual life seriously, mainly because they know that sometimes that they take to spiritual life, but will they make it? Make it means that are they getting the right guidance in life? This will be one consideration. Say, for example, if a child gets an association of a realized soul, and if he goes, and if you have good understanding of spiritual life, the chances that you may not put any hurdle in their way, because you know that association will elevate him spiritually. But because the parents know that in this wonderful world, there are possibilities of getting cheated and possibilities of getting being used by others, parents have the fear in their mind that is this right for the child, so they tend to put a brake for the child. Look, tomorrow we don't want you to be in a situation that you have neither material life nor a spiritual life, proper spiritual life. This can happen in spiritual life. It is not that everything is so open and straightforward in this world. Often you will know that when it happens. Many, many people, years and years at a youth, they got into spiritual life and later on they felt that they are not getting anywhere. So this situation also can happen. But if someone gets in to spiritual life and he is genuinely, his karma vasana is such that attraction for the world has disappeared from inside, and same time necessary vairagyam has come in, and the desire for cultivation of knowledge and realization is very intense in that person to free himself from this cycle of birth and death, and he happened to meet a person who is also in that platform, that relationship is not going to cause any problems. And if he escapes from this world, it's not a wrong thing. Such a person is called in the Srimad Bhagavatam as Lokabahya. Lokabahya means he is in this world, but he is outside this world. Body is here, but he has gone out already from the world. And Lokabahya, in the Bhagavatam, that verse is there. In the Akashya Skandham, you will see that Lokabahya. It says there that the evam vrata svapriya nama kirtyal jadanurago dutachittamuchaihi hasatyado rodidi raudi gayan unmadavan mrityadi lokabahyaha. Kavi Maharshi is saying that if a person has, after freed himself from karma, if a person has ultimately freed himself from the got so attached to the self-realization and to Krishna so intensely that he cannot feel any attraction to this world anymore. He cannot feel any attraction to this world anymore. Such a person, evam vrata sva priyanama kirtyal, his attraction for the holy name is so high that he cannot stay away without chanting the holy name. Evam vrata sva priyanama kirtyal, jadanurago dudachittamuchaihi. That attraction for the holy name is such that sometimes he is singing, sometimes he is dancing. Jadanurago dudachittamuchaihi. And sometimes not talking to anyone, loudly he chants the holy name on his own. Loudly chants the holy name of his own or dances of his own. Hasati adho raudidi, rodidi raudi gayan. Sometimes without any reason, he laughs. Without any reason, he laughs. And sometimes without any reason, he cries. All these things should not be done artificially. If you do it artificially, it will flop one day. It won't work. This has to happen in the normal way. So I say, sometimes we read Bhagavatam, why don't we give it a try? And you start doing that, we will end up in prison. Somebody will take you to another place. There is a treatment for that facility. I'll say like that. Hasatidi raudidi raudi gayan. These are things to happen to you, not that you do it on your own. If you do it on your own, it has no meaning. Evam vrata sva priyanama kirtyal jadanurago drutachittamuchaihi. You have to remember, who is talking this is spoken by the best among the devotees. And who is asking the question? The best among the jnanis, Janaka. King Nimi is Janaka, isn't it? He's another Janaka in the same family tradition. So Janaka is asking the question, and the best among the yogis are replying. Rishabhadeva's children are replying, the eldest one, Kavi. Kavi is replying among the devotees, isn't it? So they don't talk like, they're not giving us instruction. They're saying to us that this is how it is. Jadanu rago drita chittamuchaihi. Hasatyado raudidi raudi gayan. Then sometimes they'll laugh, sometimes they'll cry. Unmadavan hatyadi loga bahyaha. Some other time, out of unmadam. Unmadam means this kind of intoxication has come to them through Krishna consciousness. It's become intoxicated with that. They will start dancing. Unmadavan nrityadi. How? Loga bahya. Because they are not in this world anymore. For them, they don't have to go to a particular place to dance. Wherever they are, they may dance at any time when they like. Because all the time, realization is so high inside that they find it very difficult anymore to resist that realization from within. That's what happens to these personalities. So such a person, that is very, very rare. Such a rare person. Persons are very rare. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the best example. Nobody could say anything to Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu was falling into the water in the same way, dancing. And sometimes he would wake up and walk away from the bed without being saying to anyone. And singing, 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 he was always absorbed in that. That is that Loga Bahya state. So it's not for everybody, it's only for those who have reached that state. So that is another thing. So sannyasi, who has come to that by his activities and these realizations, if a sannyasi come to this state, he will not be questioned about it, provided he is in that state. So, Vedic philosophy, in Vedic traditions, it is like this, that the peak position is given to sannyasi for this reason. Either through jnanam or through bhakti, he has reached that state. And therefore, he addresses in that way. Such a person who has reached that state, he cannot engage in any karma in this world. He cannot engage in karma because ragadvesham he cannot have anymore. And if you take these symptoms seriously, you can see this kind of people rarely in the society also. We are looking for mahatmas, isn't it? But in order to know the symptoms of looking for a mahatma, we have to know the symptoms of a mahatma first. So Some people are like that. Who have understood Srimad Bhagavatam properly, what normally they will do, they will chant the holy name and they will read Srimad Bhagavatam and they will stay in that position for a very, very, very long time. For a very, very long time. And in the house, whoever fights or any other problems come, family life means all these things will be there. And whatever that happens, it's not a problem for them. It's not a problem for them. So, they will not get involved in anything. Whether it is profit or it is loss, they won't bother about it. So, so that person who is in that state, we have to accept it that instead of criticizing him in any way, we have to accept it that the same vasanas inside has pulled him to that state, brought him into that state. Just like vasanas have brought us into this state where we are today, similarly his vasanas has brought him to that state, and that we have to recognize that. And because he also is not there to compete with anybody in anything. And this is the Bhagavad Gita. That is why, if you remember, if you look into Srimad Bhagavatam, you will see, when Srimad Bhagavatam began, Vedavyasa Maharshi says, if you want to understand this Bhagavatam, there is some minimum requirement, he says. What's that? Dharma, Projjita, Kaidavam, Akaidavam is this. It means there is no cheating in Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is a very honest realization of sages. Dharmam, this Dharmam, Bhagavata Dharmam discussed in Srimad Bhagavatam, is a pure and honest assessment of religious process. Atra paramo narmat saranam sadam. This paramo dharmam, or this satyam, what is discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam is dharma projjita kaidava atra paramo narmat saranam sadam. Paramam, because it is paramam satyam, for absolute truth, it's only possible, he says, those who are Nirmatsaranam sadam vedyam vastavam atravastu shivadam tapatrayon mulanam. That Nirmatsaranam, that is the qualification or the qualification needed for understanding Srimad Bhagavatam. Freedom from Matsaryam. Matsaryam means this mood of competing each other. I'm better than you, you're better than me. This kind of mind. That is the greatest defect, he says here. So when we give up this, and when we give up this desire, I want to be in the friend of others, I'm happy with where I am, and always remaining in the back, then you are ready for Bhagavatam. That is the Bhagavatam's statement. It's not anybody's statement, it's Bhagavatam's statement. Marmat saranam sadam. So therefore, in spiritual life, we misunderstand things. We think we have to be right in the front of everything, isn't it? The leader. Only we are there only to lead others. Take everybody else, going back, come back to God, it is my headache, and all this kind of misunderstanding. But a devotee, or one who has understood Srimad Bhagavatam, he knows that everybody else is Krishna's, Ishavasimidam Sarvam is present there. And knowing very well the science of Bhagavatam, he will live his life in this world in such a way that he is always the last. He is happy to be the last. He has no desire to be in the first. And one who has no that competition inside, and such a person, his mind, if you observe carefully, you will notice it will not go externally wandering very much. Such a person's. Normally it is like that. Only one who is very internal looking, very internalized mind, or who has pulled mind a lot inward looking, will find able to maintain that status in the life. To be in the last. To accept that position in the last. Whereas on the other hand, you will see those who want to be in the forefront of all the problems in this world, they are... they will always be, the mind will be external. This is another symptom of that. So the very mere minimum, external things, and you know what happens, is not that the external things, but from within. It's not the external things that anything happens. External thing. And that happiness is not in the external things, but is inside us. There, the realization is there, to become happy you don't need anything from outside. There is no competition necessary to become happy. People think like this, isn't it? If I don't compete and I win this, then these are all very, 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 very subtle principles in spiritual life. That if you don't take all these things, I do a lot of karma in this world, competing, smashing everybody right in the front. I want to be always beating down everyone else. And I want to be recognized by the whole world as the number one devotee in this world, who have done so much in this world. But there, the assessment is totally different. this is the madness of this world. And we bring all that passion in us, what we have brought up from the material life, into spiritual life, and start applying it there. And start thinking that my spiritual life falls, I'm going to make it a success. And I know what I am doing. And he doesn't know. I'm going to train him up as well. All this kind of illusion gets into our head. And then there is no shanti inside. There is no internal. It's all external all the time. Everything is external. So the whole competition in this world has come is because of this. you can see in the material life also that other people who don't have it, and things which also I don't read, which I don't need, but I brought all those things and kept it with me. And that's how it has started, isn't it? This competition, many things, Prabhupada used to say this, that actually there is no shortage of anything in this world. It is amazing thing when you analyze it, this world, that there is no shortage of anything for human society in this world. Anything means for maintaining our bodily existence in this world, Krishna has provided enough in this world. There's no shortage at all. And Krishna, another point is that what upsets the whole balance is this competition and greed that we have created, and in that process we had to become each other, look at it in a different way, that we have to start seeing that possession happens. And from there, all other problems have come from that. That everybody knows all these things. I mean, many people recognize these things. But because we don't understand that Krishna is the supplier, Krishna is the controller, we don't accept that, and therefore we have this great difficulty and never able to sort this out. So, but the devotee will always think like that. So, devotee makes this decision that whatever happens in life, even there could be sometimes losses in life, it's not life is going to be a profitable curve always going up like this. And he will not link his material life in this world with the profit and loss statement from the curves. And he will not start making curves for the... This curve making is a big disease in all of us, isn't it? Especially this modern system of everything to see through. It makes it easier, pie charts and the curves. But if it comes into our daily life also, it can sometimes cause great depression inside our mind. That if you start looking into the curves and start judging your own life. Sometimes this also happened. Devotees also, after they became devotee, they started making curves about their spiritual life. The other way it started working. Instead of throwing them out and coming to some sensible life, they started, in the early days it has happened, some devotees who were very much infected with this curves and statistics, they started making curves about their spiritual life, thinking that probably in spiritual life it can help. So we take all these things very seriously. And we say we are using Krishna service. All this understanding. But Krishna service doesn't require any of these things. That's the point I'm saying here. Krishna service requires Ishavasamidam Sarvam. That is what requires Krishna. That we won't do. That we will leave it behind. Ishavasamidam Sarvam Yadkincha Chakatyam Chagat Tena Tektvena Bunchida Magrida Kasya Siddhanam. If we have accepted this one verse from the Ishavanishad, the Rishis are telling us, they can realize the soul right now here before we leave this body. If this principle of this world is versus completely taken on board in life. So, so many times, and it mentions like this, that sometimes there was one very wealthy person who lived very well. And he did business and he lived well, made good money, and somehow or the other the circumstances at that particular time in his life was very good. He made a lot of money and lived a good life. Unfortunately, something happened in business and the business flopped. Business flopped, lost a lot of money. Lot of money. And it has practically become difficult for him to live in this world because of the debts and other things. So one day he said, actually I learned a good lesson, he said. What I learned was, before when I had so much wealth, I never thought that I could live like this, he said. In such poverty, with so little things in this life, you could live in this world. I never realized that, he said, when I had all that. That is the greatest lesson he understood by when material nature forced upon him to give up everything. And then he found that it was not necessary to have many of the things what he thought is essential to live in this world. To live in this world. So, after many years, again the business developed and a lot of money came back to him. This do happen in life. These things do happen in life. But now he says here, Krishna made him to understand that life is not centered around the wealth what you have created. Now I know that without these things, I am full. That was his answer, reply on that. He said, even without all these things, I am full. So many times, many things in this material world will create that illusion in us, in our head. So we will think that without that we can't live there. And it is that illusion that is creating the distress in our mind. That is the distress in our mind. So, you can see every time a new material comfort or happiness comes in life, we have to be constantly alert about that. That tomorrow, is this going to cause me distress in some form? Just like I can tell you, when electricity wasn't there, many 40, 50 years ago in India, people lived in the life. They didn't have any anxiety about it. Now there is always anxiety whether electricity will be there or not. Tomorrow what will happen? And then so many other anxieties that's been created from this anxiety. That in order to generate electricity, you need power plants or nuclear power plants or whatever the modern technology offers. But many people have started realizing, is it worthwhile creating this so much anxiety just to get electricity inside our mind? And of course, this you cannot stop it, the world goes its own way. But thoughtful people have started seeing this, that the so-called living standard improvement, in the name of improving the living standard, what we have actually created is more anxiety and distress within ourselves. And they know very well, especially the older generations knows very well, that we can live in this world without electricity. People lived in this world before without electricity. So, I know, nowadays it's difficult because people who are in the 21st floor to come down, they need the lift, isn't it? It's difficult, but people in the past didn't have that problem. So, happiness is not totally dependent on material things alone. Happiness is not dependent on that. So, the happiness inside, that is what Krishna is saying here, that tena tektvena bunjida implies all these things. That happiness coming from tena tektvena bunjida is the kind of happiness that you experience by giving up things in this world and able to live in this world without the use of so much of the material facilities in this world. Material facilities in this world. Generally, we say life is comfortable when we have a nice home, when we have a nice car, when we have nice holidays, when we have nice income. All these things we consider as the ingredients for happiness in this world, isn't it? Bhagavata philosophy, Ishopanishad's philosophy is tena tektvena bunchida. Not by having that you are going to be happy. When you give away and you are able to live in this world satisfied inside, you are happy. That is the Bhagavata principle. Tena tektvena bunchida. Why? Magrida kasvasil dhanam. A person who is offering everything to Krishna that way, Magrida kasvasiddhanam, he knows whose is this wealth. Whose is this wealth? Wealth belongs to Krishna, not ours. And he will know where it has to go back to at the end. And that understanding, Ishavasamidam Sarvam, Yatkinja Jagatyam Jagat, Tena Tektuena Bunjida Magrida Kasvasiddhanam. Not just words, but what Krishna says here is that this principle of recognizing to whom it belongs to, which is Krishna's property, everything is Krishna's, and at the same time, giving up in one's own life all the time and offering it to Krishna, that is what Tena Tektvena Vunchita means. And he is complete. And one who lives in that life, Krishna says, he is Purnam, Purnamadam. He is Purnam. Because Purnam, Purnatvam, or completeness is not from material objects, it's coming. Purnatvam, completeness, comes from the soul. This is the important principle. Now we are thinking, our life is complete if we have the car, the best car we have, or the best job we have, the best we have, everything in life. That things we are complete. But Upanishad is telling us, you become complete not by having all that. On the other hand, when you don't have it, but from inside, from the soul, that Purnatvam comes. That is the principle. That's why those words, invocation prayers and the first mantra, the Upanishads, they go side by side. Purnamadam, first stress this point. Purnatvam is inside. Completeness is inside. You are incomplete if that knowledge is not there, if the realization is not inside, that I am complete within myself. I don't need anything from outside because my soul, by the very nature itself, is complete. So that's why definition of the soul is like this. Purnamadam, Purnamidam, Purnad, Purnam Udachade, Purnasyam, Purnam Adaya, Purnam Eva Avashishade. Whatever you take out of the soul, doesn't matter. The soul on its own is always Purnam. It's completely Purnam, number one. Number two, Ishavasyam Idam Sarvam, Yatkinja Jagatyam Jagat. Everything, cover it with Ishwara, Krishna. Cover it with the soul, the whole world. Yatkinja Jagatyam Jagat. The whole world should be Ishavasyam Achadiniyam. It should be covered up. And then what will happen? Tena Tektvena Bunchida. You can take what is very minimum needed for maintaining this body in this world. That Krishna is not refusing that. He says you can take that, what's minimum needed for maintaining this body inside. Ma grida kasu siddhanam. That always being conscious that it's all Krishna's wealth. And when a devotee comes to that, he is in that state. That is why if you look into the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there is a statement there that he is completely in that state. Krishna says there, which state is that? That is what is discussed. That verse is coming from here, from this Upanishads. Vishobanishads, this verse, that is in the second chapter, if you look there, you will see. It is the verse number... That verse, that is the 70th verse. Verse 70. Apuryamanam jala pradishtam. Then. Apuryamanam jala pradishtam. Samudrama ba provishandi yadwal. Tadvad kamayam provishandi sarve. Sashandi mapno dina kama kami. This verse is representing this Ishavasya verse there. I'll read the translation. A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. Such desires. So, Purnatvam or completeness comes not from accumulating things or achieving anything in this world. On the other hand, Avuryamanam ajala pradishtam samudramalaba praveshandi yadvad. Just like when the rivers flows into the ocean, no river is anymore a river, whether it is Ganga river or Yamuna river, or it doesn't matter which river it is. Once they have reached into the ocean, they become merged there. They have no individual identity anymore. River which is ever being filled, but is always filled. Once they go there, what do they experience? The river may come when it leaves Himalayas. The Ganga river makes a lot of noise. And all the way right up to Ganga Sagar, where it joins the Bay of Bengal, it flows all the way from, and its power is so powerful, the flow is so strong in Ganga River, makes a lot of noise and create a lot of noise and joins the ocean. After it has joined the ocean, it is peaceful there. After it has joined the ocean, it is peaceful inside. Similarly, tadvat kamanyam pravishanti sarve sashandimapnodi na kamakami. He says here that a person who is like that, that who has many, many desires may be coming in, inside. A lot of desires may come. But as soon as he go back to the soul, all the desires have gone because he is in the realized state always. He is always in the self-realized platform. So there what happens? All these desires, just like Ganga River, immediately comes to a stop. Immediately comes to a stop. That is the power of self-realization. That's why Krishna says that apuryamanam achala pratishtam. Achala pratishtam means he is not moved by anything. Whatever desire comes, these are qualities of the Brahminical culture. Very advanced Brahmanas who have properly educated and trained and who have lived a very long life in this world, if you observe them carefully, you will notice this quality in them. Nothing in the family or household life disturbs them. So many distress happens in their life, nothing disturbs them. Nothing. Look at Sudama, best example. Was he ever disturbed about anything? And look at the condition at home. The house is leaking, water is everywhere, and no food to eat. But Prashanta Alma, always this Abhuryamanam Jala Pradishtam state. So it's not something that is not possible to achieve. It is achievable, but one has to accept that this is the perfection. This state, what Krishna is saying here. In the, if you look into Bhagavatam, you will see many devotees in that state. Many devotees in that state. Particularly, when Sukadeva Goswami spoke about Sudama, he wanted to mention this, that because he was saying to Parikshit Maharaj, Parikshit, I have only one more story to tell you before I move into the serious business of Ekadasi Skandam. And that is this devotee story. And that is how he starts with Sudama, isn't it? So there he mentioned that Sudama's quality says, says here, Krishnasya sil sakha kaschil brahmano brahma vittamaham virektam indriyarteshu prashandalpa jidendriyaham. Just see that verse. Krishnasya sil sakha kaschil. It is chapter 80 in the Srimad Bhagavatam. 10th canto is coming to an end. 10 more chapters, 10th canto is over. So there he says, Sudha Goswami saying here, that just before this chapter, Parikshit Maharaj asked this question. To whom? To Sudha Goswami. He says, I heard so much about Krishna. Now, 79 chapters of the 10th canto, I've heard about Krishna. And Sukadeva Goswami already knew that there is not much time left to talk a lot of things. You can keep on talking various... He says, hundreds of years I can talk about Krishna. That's what he said in the beginning. Huh? So now he knew he just wanted to pick and choose what he wants to say from now on. So he says to Parikshit, do you want to hear anything anymore about Krishna? I have spoken to you, and that you will see in the previous chapter. When he said that, Rajavaja, Parikshit says to him, then Bhagavan Yani Vachanyani Mukundasya Mahalmanaha Viryani Ananda Viryasya Shodamichamahe Prabhum. Konvashutva Sagat Brahmam Uttama Shloga Salkadaha Virameda Visheshatyo Vishanna Kama Organehim. Then he says that, how can I say that I am satisfied about hearing about Krishna? He says, how can I say I am satisfied by hearing about Krishna? Parikshit is saying this. This is almost the sixth day now. It's the sixth day. There's only last one more day, that day and the next day left. His life is gone from this world. So Parikshit is fully aware the state of the state where he is at. So when Parikshit said that, immediately Sudeva Goswami went into a highly transcendental state. Nimagna hridayo abhavid, he says, completely closed his eyes, and Vishnu radena sambrashto Bhagavan bhadarayani Vasudeve Bhagavadi Nimagna hridayo abhavid. Vishnu radena sambrashto Bhagavan bhadarayani. That when Parikshit reminded Sukadeva Goswami that the time is also fast approaching, that Bhagavan Bhadarayani, Sukadeva Goswami immediately understood the situation is very serious now. I don't have a lot of time to talk about other things. To this now, so much he has spoken, isn't it? 2-3 candos about creation. A person who is going to die, you tell him about creation. What does it matter to him? Somebody is going to die next in an hour in the hospital. I go to him with the third candle. Have you heard how this creation has come? What interest will he have? Will he be bothered about creation? For him, creation is over, isn't it? So this is the same thing with Parikshit also. Parikshit is dying next day. He's got one more day left. And all this time he has been telling about creation, how creation has happened, how Brahma created, what happened during creation, and all these things. We are all in that state, isn't it? Tomorrow we all could be gone. Many of us could be gone tomorrow. Now somebody is telling you, creation, oh, it's fantastic. Bhagavatam tells about creation. So, telling creation in the scripture, the intention is not to keep you informed about the purpose is not to tell you about creation actually. These are the subtleties of Bhagavatam. If you look into creation, in Bhagavatam, creation is spoken in one way. In Bible, creation is spoken a little different. Quite different, isn't it? And I don't know in Quran how it is spoken. But creation is an interesting factor for everyone. And even knowing well that he had only 7 days left, 2 or 3 days were spoken about creation. And all the kings who were born at that time fought each other, their children, grandchildren, what did this happen, all that kind of things. So when you study Srimad Bhagavatam, you also have to look at it, why all these things were spoken. Otherwise, if you just start taking every single verse and start thinking, oh, everything is important. Suppose if I remember creation at the time of death, it will be very nice. If I can remember how creation happened in this world. Creation is not going to help you at the time of death. What will help you at the time of death is that what is a message Krishna has put it through Bhagavatam to us. That, if you got it, you got it. Otherwise, you haven't got it. Otherwise, simply reading Srimad Bhagavatam just like a ritual every day, I'm reading Bhagavatam, never gives any time to think about it, what I have to get out of Bhagavatam. Krishna tells us so many things in the Bhagavatam. But at the end, when Sukadeva Goswami heard this, he realized, I haven't got much time to talk about it. So what did he do? He said that, Vasudeve Bhagavati Nimagna Hridayo Bhraveen. Immediately thought about Krishna and thought, what should I say to him now? Even after consulting Krishna, Sukadeva Goswami spoke about Sudama. This is the beauty of that chapter. He spoke about Sudama to Parikshit after consulting Krishna, personally inside. Vasudeve Bhagavadi Nimagna Hridayo Bhraveed. Sudha Goswami is saying this in the Bhagavatam. And then, what was the first thing he said? Krishna Syasil Sakha Kaschil. Krishna had a friend during his childhood. A close friend. And Brahmano Brahmavittamaha, a Brahmana. Who was a Brahmana? But not only an ordinary Brahmana, Brahmavittama, self-realized, knew what is Brahma means. Yeah? Knew what is Brahma means. That kind of friend. Viraktaha, absolutely no connection with anything in this world. No attachment to anything in this world. Viraktaha, Indriyarteshu, all the senses in the body, he had no connection with them. Imagine that. For us, you see, our Jagrat state is the world of senses, isn't it? Jagrat state is, what is this Jagrat state? We keep saying Jagrat states, Jagrat state. Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. Three states we have. Why these three states were created? Have you ever thought about that? Ajari Swamiji gives a very firm and clear reply on this. He says, Jagrat state, you understand what is the world of senses. Sensual world it is. you don't do anything in this world except sense gratification or sense enjoyment or dealing through senses. The day, the time, morning we wake up, right up to the point we go to sleep at night, is nothing but sense that is active, isn't it? Senses, 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 senses. Nothing but senses. So this sense enjoyment and the world, what senses can do for you, is being taught through this Jagrat state. One. If you take to the dream state, for example, the next thing, what happens in the dream state? Dream state is teaching you how creation has happened in this world. Don't go into the book and start looking how the creation started. Creation happens, as long as you are in the dream state, you can see creation is happening from you, from within. You create the dream from within yourself, from the soul, isn't it? From the mind, it comes out through the soul. That power of creation is inside your mind, which is a energy given to it from the soul. And similarly, the external world, what we create inside through the dream as our own world, this world has manifested in the same way. Only difference is, this dream lasts shorter, the other dream lasts longer. That's all. There is practically no other difference. We'll discuss it tomorrow, some other time. This Jagrat Swapnam Sushupti, if you study very well, there is no need even to do anything else in this world, if you have got it inside properly. Similarly, in the Sushupti state, in the deep sleep state, has been created to tell us that without this body, without this mind, without these senses, you can be happy, and that is the perfect happiness state, which is Sushupti. So Sushupti state is that state where there is no body, there is no mind, there is no senses, there is no sense enjoyment. In spite of all that, you are experiencing the highest state of happiness there, in the Sushupti state. To prove to the point to us that every day Krishna is telling us, in Sushupti state, without body, without mind, without intelligence, without senses, without any of this external world, you can experience the highest state of happiness, what you cannot get even in the Jagrat state. You cannot even get in the Jagrat state. Because in Jagrat state, if you have to compare the happiness of Jagrat and Sushupti very well, only then you will know this difference. In Jagrat state, anything you get in this world which makes you happy, after a while it will go, isn't it? It is not going to stay forever. You can see, even with the wealthiest people in this world, now they are not getting any kick from the wealth what they have created. So they are looking for new avenues how to create more happiness. They feel that so much billions they have accumulated, and now they are thinking how to become happy. What should I do to become happy now? So they are searching for a new possibility. What I am saying is, that happiness, what you acquire in material in the Jagrat state, never will give you a perfection of happiness. It's not possible, number one. Number two, any happiness in this world, if you enjoy it over a limit, it will bring you distress at the end, isn't it? It will bring you distress at the end. Say, for example, if I love some nice feast, and somebody has given me a good feast, and if there's nobody else there to eat, and giving you all the food, you can have it, like Bhima has eaten. And what will happen? Very next day you will be taking Gaviscon. There's no question about that, isn't it? So everything, material life, any happiness out of senses has its limitations. On the other hand, if you look into the Sushupti state, no matter, you don't give me millions of pounds when I am tired, if you give me allow to sleep happily, peacefully, without being disturbed. That's why Mujugunda asked the demigods, you know that. Mujugunda, he went and fought the war in the heavenly planets. Ultimately, they asked him, what do you want as the moon? He says, I want to have a good sleep. He said, because that happiness, what you get from the deep sleep, you won't get it in anywhere else. Why? It is then that Krishna is perfectly giving a real down-to-earth experience there, a soul which is yourself, in the absence of the body, absence of the mind, absence of the intelligence, absence of the ego, you have that rejuvenation happened inside in association with Krishna. That is the Sushupti state's perfection. That's where you are experiencing happiness. To prove to the point to us that happiness in Jagrat will never be compared to the happiness in Sushupti. It's a discussion required in a much deeper level. And then you will notice it, how important this Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti three states are. If they are understood properly, and if they are analyzed very well, that alone will bring to that state what Krishna is talking about in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. That Siddha Prajnatam comes from all these things. Not knowing these things, it's not going to happen. It will come through these things. That's why it's the importance of all these things spoken there. Now we will stop at that point. I think it is nearly 25. We'll just chant for a few minutes.